Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode here at The Damage Report. I am John Iderola. I'm alone in the TYT studios, and from yesterday to today, we went from perfectly normal LA to this building apparently has been transported to the middle of Antarctica because it is so freaking cold, both inside the building and also all over LA. I'm joined once again by JR Jackson. JR, why is it that when it's like 61 degrees in LA, it feels like it's the middle of the tundra?
Well, I hate to say it this way because I'm not one of those guys. Because we're chumps, but that's okay. We're supposed to be chumps. That's why we're here. You know, I was born here and I grew up somewhere else, but I came back. The reason I came back is because I was never supposed to be in those other areas where it was cold, where 60 degrees was warm and people run outside with shorts on and say, yeah, summer. No.
Yeah.
We're made this way. Our skin is thin.
I guess. Dragons like it hot. That's just the way it is. Notice that both of us are wearing like extra layers. We're inside. We're not like doing this from the deck of a ship or anything. But for some reason, it's just so freaking cold. Anyway,
that would be cool.
So
We should have a remote shoot one day from the deck of a ship. See how that goes. That'd be awesome.
I've shot on the deck of a ship. I don't recommend it. And it was in the North Pole. And I think it was warmer than I am right now, actually. I literally have shot from the deck of a frozen ship. And it's colder. So thank you for joining us, everybody. Most of this hour is going to be me complaining about the temperature. But other than that, we also have, you know, the attempted subversion of American democracy. That's ongoing. We're going to be talking about that. We've got a white conservative cosplaying as a gay black man. That's always fun and getting caught in it. That makes it even more fun. And we're also going to be talking. I know it's just the most ridiculous news because we're a ridiculous country that is deserving of no respect and will get no respect.
Absolutely.
So anyway, thank you to everybody for joining us. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already as we proceed through this hour of news. And as you chat along and comment along and send us super chats and tweets and all that, we'll respond as we go. I can see some already coming in here, including one from Nat A who says, first super chat here. I love the show and the Dragon Squad. I named myself the Crochet Dragon. That's pretty cool. I like that. I can imagine a knitted dragon. Still terrifying, but also cozy. I could use a crocheted dragon around me right now, actually.
Anyway. I love it that there's folks that are watching that are giving their own Dragon Squad names. It's awesome. I think someone shot something to me. They said Moni Dragon, but I was calling her Money Dragon because that's just cool. Mm-hmm. Everyone's getting dragon names. I love it.
There's enough to go around. With that, there's also enough news to go around. So with that, why don't we jump into this thing?
Yes.
Donald Trump is not content just to sort of block in every way he can Joe Biden's ability to set up his own team for the transition. The other thing he's doing is pretending that he is going to need new employees. So according to two sources familiar with the situation, as well as written communications reviewed by the Daily Beast, the White House Presidential Personnel Office is still in the process of vetting candidates for job openings in various parts of the federal government, positions that the White House intended to fill by early next year. So they're still like receiving resumes for new jobs while they're firing people, which we'll turn to. And we're also receiving all these reports about people in the White House who are like, oh my God, I gotta get my resume out there. How am I gonna get another job? As if there's any question. They're horrible Republicans. They'll get hired somewhere. But anyway, JR, they're still doing this. It's like, wasn't there an episode of a short story arc of The Office where you just pretend that you're the boss? And you pretend to fire people and it becomes true?
It seems like there's a story for The Office and Veep every 5 seconds when it comes to this administration. And I've seen neither show. I've seen like one episode of The Office and that's kind of it. But apparently I need to catch up because the real life things that are happening apparently happen in sitcoms every day. There's so many layers to the way this is going, the way people are trying to find a way out, prepare for their next life. But you mentioned how Republicans will still have a job because, you know, they'll hire terrible Republicans no matter what. The new ones are the ones that are in trouble because if the only thing, if this was like K Street, specifically K Street, people trying to work with lobbying firms to try and use their influence. In case people don't know the way it works, if you've been in Washington already and you make some connections, you get to go out then make more money by going and influence those same connections, because those are your buddies, to do the bidding of these companies. That's lobbying in a quick nutshell, right? So many people that may want to go to that route, if the only thing on your resume is you work with this administration, they're pretty much not gonna hire you because you're too polarizing. So they're like, well, how many buddies do you really have in Washington, especially right now, after your guy who's sitting in the White House with his arms crossed like this, won't leave. And then when you finally leave, you're associated with them. That's you now. So the new folks who they don't have a very in-depth resume are really in trouble as far as getting jobs. And then they're also being blocked from doing so after the news started being revealed that they were doing this. So you need to get another job so you can pay rent. You try and go get that job on a legitimate basis. This administration is blocking you from doing it, or else they'll fire you and then you'll lose your last 2 months of any kind of money. And you're just stuck in this circle. They really don't care about anyone, even the people who decided to stick with them through this horrible administration.
Yeah, it's sad. And we're gonna have great examples of what you just gave there in just a second. But in addition to continuing the hiring process, just yesterday, the Washington Post reported that the White House Budget Office has instructed federal agencies to continue preparing the administration's budget proposal for the next fiscal year. But like, it's not gonna be your budget. You're not gonna be the administration. Cause you lost the election. I know they don't accept that, but like, it's not gonna happen.
What do you think the plan is? Like,
no, this is exactly what's happening. It's like, oh no, baby, don't break up with me. No, oh, that hurts. Okay, so, but we're still going to Hawaii, right? We're still gonna take that trip. No, you got dumped. You don't get to go to Hawaii. You don't get your budget. That's the way it works. But they're still expecting that they're gonna get some tonight. You're not. It's over. It's over. It's
like the day when you get broken up with, you call and be like, so how you doing?
No. That I think is their pending legal challenges to the election, I guess. You still think you're gonna get some release from the judiciary, but that's not gonna happen. I'm confusing myself now. But anyway, you also, I just want to, as a reminder, in terms of muddying the waters over who's going to be president, yesterday we had Mike Pompeo saying there will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. It's just like, oh, okay, so here is the theme of today's show. We're going to cover a lot of this, and a lot of it is going to be comical, laughable, fumbling and flailing and pathetic. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be worried or nervous or scared or vigilant or anything like that. Because they are still doing this stuff, and it's not just comments, it's not just, you know, prep our budget. They just fired or had the resignations of Mark Esper, defense secretary, his chief of staff, the undersecretary of defense for policy, James Anderson, the undersecretary of defense for intelligence, Joseph Kernan. And here is what is most amazing about that. I'm gonna read a tweet from Bill Kristol, something that I don't normally do, but I have a good reason for it today. So they did those firings, but take a look at the ripple effect that came from those firings. So Bill Kristol tweeted, a sign of the loyalty oath atmosphere now at DOD. When Jim Anderson was fired yesterday as acting undersecretary for policy, he was given a clap out as he left the building. The White House called to request names of any political appointees who joined in so that they could be fired. So the people who, like, you know, the thing from TV where like they walk past all the people who are clapping, they're gonna purge the clappers.
Oh no, the level of petty. Okay, it's already where if you do anything that's right, it's been the way for most administration. If you say something that's correct, if you say something factual and it's in opposition of the president, your job is already in danger. And then the further and further he falls into this abyss of insanity, the more and more petty he gets. So you can leave, but if anyone claps, how do you monitor the clappers? Oh yeah, Jimmy in the corner was clapping.
Well, there are devices that can monitor clapping. I've heard of them on TV commercials before. Maybe they're using those. Oh, you clapped on? No, clap off. Clap off out of this building right now.
I can't. No, we've said it many times already, but it's unprecedented. This is the level of petty that you're going with. Someone clapped as someone left the building, so you're fired. Who are you gonna replace them with? What's the process for getting hired? You can sit down. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Would you clap if someone left the office? Like, what are the questions you're asking people? What are the qualifications to fill these roles for people who clapped?
They want loyalists. That's it. That's the only thing they want. And they are, by the way, we know this from years of experience. They're perfectly happy with not filling these positions. Yeah. They're perfectly happy with the government not functioning. And if it is going to function, it's going to function only by having loyalists in place. They've been weeding people out. They're continuing this. They're continuing this now knowing that they're not going to be in office, or at least knowing there's no legitimate path for them to get in office. They're still on their way out firing people.
I'm beginning to wonder though, do they know they're not going to be in office?
I don't know. Well, that's the debate that we're going to have in just a little bit. Yeah, but this, you know, the pretending, the budget things, the firing, as well as the loyalty purges, that is truly scary stuff.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Donald Trump has mostly receded from public view since the election, appearing on Thursday at his press conference where you saw it. I'm not going to repeat the stuff that he said there. He didn't even show up to the Four Seasons Total Landscaping thing. Now, he did make an appearance today for Veterans Day, but he didn't speak, which is how I like him best. He's a you want to see him, not hear him kind of guy. But anyway, he has mostly receded from public view. He's also apparently receded from being president, according to the sources of Jonathan Lemire, Associated Press reporter, who says this is slowing a transition at the time of true crisis, referring to what we've been talking about them blocking Joe Biden. The coronavirus pandemic is surging out of control across the country, the worst it's ever been, state by state, setting a record number of cases each day. And we have a president who, in the meantime, has largely abandoned his day job. He himself has not attended a coronavirus task force briefing in months. His public schedule does not show he's received an intelligence briefing since October 1st. Jeez. The White House hasn't read out a foreign leader call in weeks. He is simply not governing the country right now at a time of crisis. And we've known for a very long time, nobody's shocked to find out that he doesn't like doing the job. But he's not even pretending. Like, when he used to get those intelligence briefings, that was a laughing stock, but at least he did it. His coronavirus task force appearances were an insult and a joke, or both, but he was kind of doing them. He's not doing anything anymore. He's sort of president, but not really president at the same time, Jared.
Yeah, you know what's weird? I was thinking about this, and when the story came out, I was like, you know what? I kind of had that thought, but didn't have a full conscious, like, you know, completion of that thought. I was like, you know what? He hasn't been doing anything. And then I think because the reason I ignored myself is because I was thinking, but when has he ever done anything? But there was a different level of doing nothing. It was like literally detaching himself from any role, any connection, any communication, anything that's even the appearance of responsibility to serve your position. And I was like, man, he hasn't really done much. I mean, you see him campaigning and going off on mail-in ballots before the election constantly. That's all he's been doing. Because you know what? He's like a kid. If you pour out a whole box of or a container of Legos in front of him, and he starts putting together because he's so excited, he just puts together random things. It looks like a blob. You go, well, here, little Johnny, here. Well, here's the instructions. Put together the spaceship. And he's like, this is too much. And he just leaves it alone in a mess on the floor. That's what this guy's been doing. Yeah. He just wants to just make a mess with the Legos instead of creating something that's real with the Legos. And when someone tells him to, he cries and leaves.
Well, and the fear is that at some point American democracy will accidentally step on one of those Legos, and you don't want that. That's just disastrous. By the way, I want to remember when we turn back to the super chats, I want to talk a little bit about Legos. But anyway, you're right. And it's not to say that he's not doing anything. He's spending his time doing something. We just don't necessarily know what it is behind the scenes. But we can see some of the effects. We already talked about all the firings, the purges that are going on. I assume he's involved in those. Behind the scenes, he is spreading misinformation around the election. We're going to have a little bit more of that. It's gotten to the point where Biden's team is worried that Trump will encourage his supporters to disrupt the inauguration events. You know, I don't know whether the fear involves actual violence, although there's reasons to fear about that, but just that they would go at all could be a problem. I honestly don't even know why you would have a real inauguration. It's still a pandemic. We should be avoiding these events where possible. I understand it's a big day for the country and everything, but we do have to be safe. Now, in terms of the misinformation, let me give you a little bit. We've been sort of, for the past few days, we've been tracking Trump's public statements. And by public statements, I mean tweets, because that's all that we're getting. So he tweeted, a guy named Al Schmidt, a Philadelphia commissioner and so-called Republican rhino, is being used big time by the fake two spaces news media to explain how honest things were with respect to the election in Philadelphia. He refuses to look at a mountain of corruption and dishonesty. We win.
So what does that mean?
Does that mean that, like, if you burn Al Schmidt, you win? Is that in the Constitution? I don't know exactly what that means. Well, I also don't think anybody knows what that means.
I think this official must have appeared on TV for him to even tweet about this, because he definitely didn't look at any statements.
He didn't look at any
communication. Yeah, this is a TV appearance that Trump is responding to, because that's what he's doing with his time. He's waiting for people to come on TV and defend him, and he keeps finding people telling him the truth, and he can't take it, so he resorts to Twitter to go talk about those people. Somehow being a rhino now because they don't support you. Again, look how far we've gotten from reality. The main thing, the first thing we should notice in this is that he calls someone a rhino for not just going along with whatever he says. Yeah. Why is that relevant? This guy has his own mindset and is saying something, and he's probably terrible on 75 other things, but he says one bit of truth and that makes him a rhino. And if it's a rhino, why is because that so bad? What's he doing
because
to you?
Trump, he wants loyalty. You could be the best Republican ever. If you ever don't agree with him when he wants you to, that's it. You're done. Good day, sir.
Yeah, and by the way, people like to call Democrats dinos too and stuff. And then, like, you know, maybe a Joe Manchin's of the world, because he's literally working for the Republican Party and stopping policies and agendas that would actually help the American people. Now, this guy's mad and calling this guy a rhino because he's not helping you. Just look at the objectives of each one of these name callings that could happen.
So we have all of what you just said, the argument that you constructed, but Trump would respond, we win, I guess. But in addition to that, in addition to just trying to push back against, basically pushing back against the fact checkers, that's what he's doing right now. He's saying, you can't trust anyone who says this was a valid election, even if they're a Republican, because if they do that, in doing that, they become not a Republican anymore. It's a magic trick that he has. He also has maybe a new avenue of attack. I have no idea how you would prosecute the case that this implies, but he tweeted, the fake posters at ABC Washington Post produced a possibly illegal suppression Capitol poll just before the election, showing me down 17 points in Wisconsin when, in fact, on election day, the race was even and we are now preparing to win the state. Many such deplorable instances. So he lost Wisconsin, he's gonna lose Wisconsin. I don't know why he put deplorable in quotation marks. Is it a weird reference to Hillary that had no place to tweet? Yes. I don't know. It is. It's got to be. But what he's saying there is that the polls that were off were illegal and that they suppressed the vote. I think that's dumb. I don't know what. Okay, so we've gone through a lot of court cases over the last week that didn't go anywhere, that were nonsensical in a variety of ways. But what would you even say to the judge? They did a poll, it was very suppressive, so no Wisconsin or revote. I don't know. What would you actually do? I have no idea what this leads to.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we know Trump in general has historically lost court cases all the time because he doesn't know what to do, or is the people he appoints, his attorneys that he puts in place to give his arguments, are dealing with nothing. Like, so his attorneys have to go into court and make a case based off of what this guy is saying. Of course, he's confused as to why it's not working. He doesn't know how evidence works because he, again, it goes back to his own ego and his brain. He thinks, I say it, it's true. It's literally all it is. Facts actually have no place in my world. If facts are in front of me, all I'll do is say no, and it goes away. Because that's what's happened his whole life. People have allowed him to get away with this kind of behavior his whole life. So now he's confused. He's a 5-year-old that doesn't know things aren't going to always go your way. And if you want things to go your way, you have to work hard. Maybe do some responsible things every once in a while. No, he just says it and thinks it's going to go. And then every time he loses, he's like, well, let's change the person who's making these decisions. That's all it is.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to ask you, JR, and the audience a question. We've just showed you some of the ridiculous flailing, and it's comical. It doesn't make any sense. And so the question is, are we not taking the threat that they could do something more seriously? That maybe a court will look at this insanity and say, I don't care. It's fine. Yes, it was an illegal suppression poll. You won Wisconsin or whatever. Or that, you know, before, so the December 8th is the day to certify the results, that one state will just be like, you know what, we're going to do the thing that people have been worried about for a couple of months. We're just going to give him the votes. He didn't win. We're going to give him the results. And then between then and the 14th, in theory, you'd have the rival slate of electors. I will admit, I have been sort of writing this off more and more each day because the lead that Biden has in each individual state is too big to overthrow. He has won too many states to just overthrow one and still win. But should we still be more worried? Should we be, you know, should the Democrats be doing anything? Like, it's one thing for me, an idiot on YouTube, to not be doing anything. But so far, the Democrats aren't doing anything. They're like, Biden is getting ready to be president, but Chuck Schumer is just celebrating, you know, his reelection effectively, or reelection to the leadership.
It seems like the approach is to let them kind of flail until they get tired and the tantrum's over and they fall asleep. Now, I'm okay with that approach right now. It's been like a week. I'm okay with that approach for right now. But then what the thing is after that, be prepared for that potential next step. Because again, as we mentioned, he's purging people from justice. Some folks from justice are quitting because of what Barr's saying that they should be doing. He's purging people from defense, so, and replacing them with yes men that are going to do whatever he wants. So these are positions of influence and power that are, you know, levers surrounding our servicemen and military. So I get that concern, but keep an eye on it, because I don't know if reacting right now is going to do much good. It's not like he's going to stop because we react. So maybe once it gets to that point where we have the, you know, the electors have to put forward things, and they've mentioned before how in 2000 with Gore and W, how it was extended because of recount. Completely different, by the way, a real recount, not some BS that they're talking here, but still it got extended and everything was fine. So let's get to those dates first. But in the meantime, let him flail, let everyone laugh at him, and but still keep a serious eye on what he's doing. You know, he can do a little bit of both, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think we should be, and I would argue that people are, they're following that be prepared thing, the SCAR principle. But should the Democrats, for instance, in the Pennsylvania state legislature, which is controlled by Republicans, and in theory, they've already said that they wouldn't, but they could just say, no, we're sending electors that are going to support Trump. What if they do that? If they do that, what happens? What do the Dems in the state legislature do? What do national Dems do? What do we do? What do you watching this program do? I don't know that I have good answers to that. Obviously, something. Obviously, it can't be allowed, even though, again, as a reminder, if Pennsylvania were to do that, that doesn't overturn Biden becoming president. It's not enough. The lead is too big. But if they did it, and if, you know, got Arizona did it or whatever, then that still wouldn't be enough. I'm not sure, but something could happen. And basically, I have always erred on the side of respond more than you possibly need to so that bad things don't happen. I think that that is a safer way to live when the future of your democracy is at stake than the alternative. But in terms of right now, I guess we have to be ready to do something, in theory, going into the streets, especially because I don't think that Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are really taking any of this seriously. I would argue they're not taking anything seriously, but I don't know what specifically else we're supposed to do until we know what the form, like with Gozer, what is the form of the end of American democracy? How do they do it? Do they do that by Supreme Court? Do they do it by the state legislature? Does Trump just ring the White House with tanks? I don't know. By the way, did you know they're building another fence around the White House?
What, like not in addition to, or they took down they took down this non-scalable, or are they adding?
No, there were already four. They're building another bigger one. There was scaffolding to build a bigger one. Yeah, I just, until we know what the form is, I don't know what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to respond right now with any kind of actionable things. I'm not sure what those actionable things would be that you would do. You know, you can talk about what he's doing, you can demean them and you know, call out their BS every 5 minutes. We can do that. And at this point, again, like you said, what can you do? You can't go in and take him out now, because even if he conceded, you can't go take him out right now. So what's the point of dragging him out, kicking and screaming? It's kind of, we have to wait. But still, again, keep an eye on it. So I don't, we don't know if there's something we could do. I'd be down to do it right now. But what else is there?
Yeah. Well, what the only thing I will say is, and this is in terms of meeting the narratives that are out there, and it's partly for us, but it's also potentially advice for the audience, is there are extremists on this question. So we're sort of saying, we got to be ready, but we don't know exactly what we're supposed to do. So we're not going to put all of our attention to it. But there are people who are saying effectively, Trump is totally doing a coup. That is the only thing you should be paying attention to. And generally, whether it's stated or not, the attached little argument to that is get off of Joe Biden's back. Let's not have, like today, the Sunrise Movement put out their wish list for cabinet positions. There's pushback against Rahm Emanuel being in. Rashida Tlaib and AOC have been messaging around what progressives should do. The argument is generally stop with all that nonsense. Trump is trying to do a coup, so don't pay attention to this. There are also people on the opposite side who are like totally checked out from the possibility. They think Trump has already totally lost 100% in every way, not just electorally. There's no chance of anything happening except a possible White House upper decker. That is the worst of our worries right now. And so I would say both of those are probably wrong. I think we can dwell in a productive middle ground that both puts pressure on Joe Biden, but also make sure that Trump doesn't squeak out some sort of authoritarian way of staying in office.
Come on, man. Like the advice to not talk about what Joe Biden could be doing as he implements his administration has absolutely nothing to do with paying attention to what Trump's trying to do as far as not accept the results of the election. Bro, we're adults. Come on, this is government, this is politics, these are politicians. They can do more than one thing at a time. And every other human in this country can do more than one thing, can think. We're not even doing anything. Can't think of more than one thing at the same time. And some people are saying, oh, call it a coup. Yeah. Fine, okay, fine, call it a coup. But still, what actionable things can we do besides call it a coup? That's what I'm saying. Keep calling out, keep saying what he's doing, and then move on. But if you're higher up as far as the Joe Biden stuff, wait a few minutes and we'll see what happens. I don't know what else you can really do.
Yeah, yeah, I get what you're saying there. You were saying, and I see one comment on Twitch from DeGravy who says, "I'm worried about faithless electors." I get what you're saying, but again, remember, there would have to be a lot of them. Like this isn't a 270 win where one faithless elector throws this thing. There would have to be, there would be dozens of us effectively. There would have
and
to be.
By the way, if there's one faithless elector, let's start talking about them now. So if they could, like, you know, basically we've mentioned how Bernie Sanders called out exactly, which a lot of people did. It wasn't just a Bernie Sanders thing. A lot of people called out exactly the way Trump would approach this election before he did it, and he did it. He did that playbook by the, like, exactly step by step. And it was called out, and it looked even more ridiculous because people said, hey, you know, didn't we just say you were gonna do this? This is a game, right? So it kind of it breaks down what they thought was gonna be this. Yeah. Oh man, this is a breakthrough moment. Look at this breaking news. Trump decides not to accept the election. Everyone knew that already. So if you think the electors are gonna do what they're gonna do, call them out before they do it. And if they wanna do it, they already look like, you know, the fools that they are.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So voter fraud, did it actually happen in the 2020 election? You've probably heard a lot of theories of the conspiratorial variety, but at least according to the New York Times front page today, election officials nationwide find no fraud. And we're gonna run through a little bit of this in just a sec. But before we get to it, I think we can learn a lot from people's actions. And I have an action for you that I want to analyze. And this is Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who just yesterday said he's offering up to $1 million to incentivize, encourage, and reward people for reports of voter fraud in Texas, even as there's been no evidence of mass voter fraud, and experts say it's rare. Patrick said that anyone who provides information that leads to a conviction will receive at least $25,000. That money will come from Patrick's campaign fund. Now, assuming this isn't illegal, and I have no idea if it is, he's free to do this. But can we acknowledge briefly that you generally don't offer $1 million for evidence of voter fraud if evidence of voter fraud is already apparent and all over the place?
Exactly.
This is what you do when you are hunting for something that you can't find. $1 million for a photo of Bigfoot. $1 million to track down the guy who stole my bicycle. That's what you do when you are facing no other option and all you have is your monetary resources. So let's just acknowledge that very briefly.
It's, you know, it's the first logical thought you could possibly have, but many people miss that. No, it's, I'm glad you said it because it really could escape you because you're too busy thinking about, oh man, can they do this? Oh, $1 million. But the first thought really should be, wait, why you need to pay someone for tips when you just told us it's rampant? It's the, like, that ends it from the beginning. I mean, when Crime Stoppers puts out a call and says, hey, if you reward given to anybody finds the culprit that was in this bank robbery photo, if someone goes and finds them, you give it to them because they haven't caught the guy yet. They don't say, we have this guy convicted for the bank robbery. Can anyone give us some tips? We'll offer you $1 million. Well, you have him already.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, no. So I'd like to announce that two things. One, we've caught the killer, but two, I've always wanted to make it rain. So let's find some more killers up in here. No, that's not how it works, Dan Patrick. Remember, Dan Patrick, very worried about voter fraud, you know, something that influences an election in a way that doesn't have to do with the will of the people. Also, the guy that was perfectly fine with trying to limit early ballots by limiting the number of ballot drop-off locations, as well as other things like that. So there were people trying to mess with the election. I'm just saying we know one of them. I don't need to give out $1 million to track down Dan Patrick. We got him. Now, really fast, we have a comment from him. He said, I support President Trump's efforts to identify voter fraud in the presidential election and his commitment to making sure that every legal vote is counted and every illegal vote is disqualified. The delays in counting mail-in ballots in other states raises more questions about voter fraud and potential mistakes. Sure, it raises questions in that you have raised questions, but they're not good ones, they're not legitimate ones, and you're, well, I was gonna swear there. You are not one to be trusted, I will say. So yeah, all of this is, this is Dan Patrick doing what all of the grifters in and out of politics on the right have done. It is a signal sent to one tiny orange man to say that I'm on your side. I think this thing was stolen from you too.
What do you get out of it? What's Dan Patrick getting out of this? I'm sorry, I keep asking the same questions. What's the end game here? They're not dumb. He's been in politics. He knows this is over. So at the end of it, what's gonna happen with your name? What's gonna happen with your position, your legacy? What's the point of this? What does he have on all these guys?
Like him more?
It's crazy.
Maybe it's just, you know, I know that a lot of Texas voters that are conservative like Trump. So Trump is saying it was stolen. His voters believe that. So I have to say it's stolen, so they'll like me too. It could be as simple as that. I don't know. It's sad no matter what.
But also, and by the way, $1 million, you can get 25,000 if something leads to some kind of, what do they say, conviction or something. And it's coming from Dan Patrick's campaign coffers. Am I right? Is that what it said? So people who gave to Dan Patrick because they support him for some reason in Texas, their money is now going to help defend Donald Trump on his wild goose chase for some evidence of voter fraud. So if you gave $25 to Patrick, if you gave $1,000 to him, that's where your money's actually going.
Yep.
People give money to a campaign because they support the candidate who's running. And then this goes and gets sent over to someone else who's lying about a different campaign. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Well, if it makes you feel any better, and it won't, I am willing to bet $1 million that nobody gets a dollar of that $1 million. First of all, because there's no voter fraud. Second of all, because it's not going to lead to a conviction. Third of all, because Dan Patrick doesn't want to give anybody money because he's a Republican.
Maybe you should run up.
Nobody's getting
money. Maybe you should start up a GoFundMe and get you. Well, Trump is doing that, but
yeah. So that's not going to happen. He provided no evidence of voter fraud. And by the way, back in October, he claimed the Democrats were trying to steal the election. And if the president loses Pennsylvania or North Carolina or Florida, they'll lose it because they stole it. And so he was saying that before. Now it has happened. And so what do you know? He still thinks it was stolen because, again, like there is no difference other than money between a random Republican governor or senator anymore and the dumbest, least informed Republican voter. They are now, they have to say and believe, or at least pretend to believe, the same things to keep their base fired up. They're not the same. Fundamentally, every one of these Republicans is fabulously wealthy and would never spend a minute with one of those voters, but they claim the same stupid conspiratorial things. That is the Republican Party now.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Anyway, let's do a little bit of a roundup of some of the claims of voter fraud that have fallen apart literally just this morning. This is us just plucking a few bits of news from just this morning. So first of all, you have a Pennsylvania postal worker whose claims have been cited by top Republicans as potential evidence of widespread voting irregularities, admitted to the US Postal Service investigators that he fabricated the allegations, according to three officials briefed on the investigation. Richard Hopkins' claim that a postmaster in Erie, Pennsylvania instructed postal workers to backdate ballots mailed after election day was cited by Lindsey Graham in a letter to the Justice Department calling for a federal investigation, which by the way, they're doing now. So part of the evidence that a senator used to make this thing start was fabricated entirely. I'm sure Graham will be apologizing for that. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about these claims. Hopkins' allegations without his name were first aired last week by Project Veritas, an organization that uses deceptive tactics to expose what it says is bias and corruption in the mainstream media. He was hailed, this individual, by James O'Keefe as an American hero. A GoFundMe page for him has raised more than $136,000, with donors praising him as a patriot and a whistleblower. Nope, he was just a liar. He was a liar and he got paid for it. The fundraising page was apparently removed by GoFundMe, so I don't know if he's going to get the money. It looks like he will not. That's small miracles. But yeah, no, he just made up.
A little disappointed. I'm disappointed that GoFundMe is not going to get this man his money. He went out there, did his job. He fooled more people that were asking to be fooled. I mean, hey, this is a tough economy right now. Let the man make his money. That's some work he put in to fool all these idiots. Actually, it wasn't much work. But still, it was work. He put his face out there, he put his name out there, he put together the GoFundMe page. If people want to give someone money, if someone is sitting outside of your local grocery store and is asking for money and someone decides to hand them $136,000, are they not allowed to have it? Hey, if you want to give away money to someone for whatever reason, because a lot of these people were quoted as reasons why they gave away their money, and many of those reasons were because Democrats are evil, because it's 100% sure that you stole this election. Hey, if you want to say those things and it makes you feel better to give someone money to say it, do that. That's not my money. Give away your money. I never criticize anyone for giving away money to someone that's asking on the street. What business is that of mine? You can give away your money. Let this man have his $136,000. Give him double. He's working.
God. Yeah, you know, I should have predicted this. Why wouldn't somebody set up this sort of thing?
I'm mad I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're one of the many Americans out there who's experiencing very hard times, been left behind by the country, ask yourself a serious question. Why aren't you grifting Republicans? Because it's so easy. Make a little video of yourself saying, you could like blur your face a little bit to make it mysterious and say that you witnessed voter fraud. But now the lamestream media is coming for me. You tweet that, Trump will tweet it 5 seconds later because they don't check anything. And then you raise $1 million on GoFundMe.
It's awesome. Yeah. Hey, by the way, I'm sorry, John, I'm gonna read one of these. One woman, she donated $100 to this guy. She wrote as she donated, "I'm an American patriot who wholly supports this man's actions. And I pray for his future and pray true Americans step in to help him through this. You're a warrior and a hero." Hey. Legally, all she said was, "I'm an American and I support this man's actions." This man's actions are to lie to you to get money. You support it, take his money, take her money.
Yeah,
she supports it.
And if your response to JR is, "Well, now though, it turned out it was fake, so she's gonna be really mad." Why are you assuming that? Why are you assuming that she will change her opinion in literally any way? He earned that money unfair and unsquare. Give it to him. Anyway, it's not just that though. You have that. That's a big one, obviously. But here is I want to show you an awesome little bit of a dialogue between a judge and one of the Trump voter fraud claim supporting lawyers. Judge says, "Are you claiming that there is any fraud in connection with these 592 disputed ballots that they were talking about?" Mr. Goldstein, "To my knowledge at present, no." The court, "Are you claiming that there is any undue or improper influence upon the elector with respect to these ballots?" Mr. Goldstein, "To my knowledge of present, no." Why are we doing any of this then? Why are you bringing up these claims when you're not even trying? But I want you to understand what's happening there. So here is an interesting thing that has been playing out in multiple cases. These lawyers have been hired by the Republicans to make the case in court that there is voter fraud. But there are consequences to this. Not to the Republicans who are paying those lawyers, there are potential consequences to the lawyers. Because if the lawyers are shown to have lied in court, they could be disbarred. Their careers could be over. So they'll go and they'll try to earn their money, but they can't, we'll see, at least most of them, they can't specifically in a way that can be proven lie. So at some point, they will go up to the brink of that cliff, but they're not gonna jump for this. It's their bodies splattering on the ground, not the Republicans who paid them, not Rudy Giuliani. And so that's why you get these insane back and forths in court.
It's but they expect them to. We've seen this throughout. This guy who's telling Donald Trump his life, he'll take people and make sure that they're loyal to him, and there is zero loyalty back. If they destroy their lives and their career, you know what he thinks of them? "Good. Thank you. You served your purpose in life is to serve me, destroy your life and be gone." Now these attorneys are beginning to not think that way. We'll see how far they get with this. Yeah. He's gonna replace him with more attorneys that are willing to jump off cliffs for him.
Yeah. And really fast, I wanna run you through just a couple more cases of how ridiculous these claims are. Republican Philadelphia City Commissioner, who I think is the one that Trump was talking about, says they looked into a list claiming dead people voted. Quote, "Between everything else that we're doing, we looked it up. Each one of them to see what their vote history was. Not a single one voted in Philadelphia after they died." But it's not just them. CNN also looked into 50 names that have been mentioned by Donald Trump and his orbit as evidence that dead people voted in Michigan. They found 37 of the 50 were dead and didn't vote. 5 are alive and did vote. 8 are alive but didn't vote. None of them were dead and voted. CNN, it's not like they did, they took lamb guts and looked through. You could just look up the names and find out. And no, those 50 names were entirely fraudulent. But I think there is no better visualization of how insane these cases have become than Laura Ingraham's show. Take a look at this photo of her interviewing a Nevada poll worker.
Oh my God.
Who is in a smoke-filled room and has been blanked out.
Come on, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is, no,
do
this
they
is,
have
this
a GoFundMe? I think they should have a GoFundMe.
We've gone full sitcom now. It's full on. This is straight up like, I feel like if you turn on those old 90s sitcoms and they want to make fun of the witness protection thing or the anonymous witness thing, and they accidentally lean forward and the light shows their face, Like it's exactly what it is. And then the disguised voice. Come on. So throughout this interview, I only listened to like the first half early because I thought this is my favorite thing today. They didn't ask who you're afraid of coming after you for speaking this truth. By the way, her truth. I don't know if you can get to the details of this story. Were you going to do that, John? Because it's
I have little interest, but
really fast. Because oh my God! So this lady says she works outside of some polling location. She saw a Biden-Harris van roll up, plastered with Biden and Harris on the side, because that's what nefarious ballot stealers do. She rolls up with a plastered van that has their name all over it. People walk up with boxes of envelopes, and she's like, "Oh, that's odd. They got a bunch of envelopes." And then people come out of the van and take the envelopes, and the people that are exchanging between them start writing on these ballots and doing something weird. And then Ingram goes, "How do you know they're ballots, though? I mean, you're from far away." And she goes, "Well, once I got closer, I said, those are ballots." So, number one, these people rolled up this intricate presidential stealing scheme. They roll up in a van that has their name on it. Then they, in broad daylight, start signing and changing ballots on the side of the van, outside of it, not in. And then when your idiot behind walks up, they don't notice you looking over their shoulder, seeing at their ballots. Come on, bro. But you get a slot on Laura Ingram's show with a shadow to tell this story. Come on. Hey, show your face, you can start your comedy career is really the best way you can go about this. Come on, man.
Somebody on Twitch said this is a bad Dave Chappelle sketch. Yeah. This is the plan. It's stealing an election in a van down by a river. No, that's not how it works. It's they walk into the Philadelphia vote counting thing. I got your fake ballots here. Anyone order some fake Biden ballots? This is so stupid. It's so stupid, but why wouldn't it be? The people who are spreading this are the dumbest people in America. We have collected the dumbest, most gullible people in America, and we've said, go, give us your election stealing story. What do you got? They don't got much in any way. The whole thing is so dumb. So dumb.
How come the anonymous lady isn't collecting Dan Patrick's $1 million yet?
I don't know. Well, it's not bad, I guess. But the shadow. But you know what though? Georgia is going to do a hand recount of the presidential race. Hand recount. So maybe they can. Maybe it's legal. Maybe nothing bad will happen. You can do these in states. Recounts happen. And you know what happens when they do recounts? They usually do find a few ballots that were wrong or were logged the wrong way, or it turns out you have to disqualify them. And so usually when you go across, you canvass a state in one of these recounts, like 100 ballots changes. Biden is winning by tens of thousands of votes. There is no legitimate recount that is going to result in him losing. And they know that again, they know that.
John, this is an unprecedented level of presidential stealing. So usually under normal recounts, 100 or so ballots is the difference. But this is Donald Trump, and he's been cheated since he was born. You know how hard his life has been. So they came after him, and this changes are going to be like 50,000 in every state. Hey, am I doing a good job? I think I can get hired to do some of this. Somebody, I have a GoFundMe, you guys. I can say this every time. Just give me money.
Oh my God, I got to start a GoFundMe. I've seen evidence of something. I saw a van. I saw five fans.
I took the red pill. Anyway. I used to work with John Iadarola, and they lie every day. Give me money.
It's just gonna be like, I saw a guy in the shadows, and he had Biden sunglasses, and I saw feet peeking out from under. It was Converse. I saw it. I know it was them. They did it. Anyway, let's read some super chats before we move on.
You would think we were exaggerating, but the story you just gave is actually more believable than some of the things that people are saying.
I would watch that movie. Please don't forget, no matter what ends up happening with Donald Trump, that one of the areas where he has done the most lingering long-term damage to our country and to our world has to do with the environment and our ability to combat the climate crisis. Remember, in May of this year, carbon dioxide levels reached 417 parts per million, the highest level ever recorded in no small part thanks to increasing US emissions, which he helped to see happen. And all along, like the things that Trump did, whether it's opening up areas to mining or logging or all the environmental deregulations, the getting rid of the methane emissions, getting rid of the higher CAF standards and things like that, was all done supposedly to benefit the economy, But that apparently hasn't actually happened, shockingly. Economists see little evidence that Mr. Trump's rollback of climate change rules actually did bolster the economy, with jobs in the auto sector having been declining since the beginning of 2019, and the trend continuing despite the rollback of rules aimed at vehicle pollution from greenhouse gases. Domestic coal production, which he's tried to spur, last year dropped to its lowest level since 1978, thankfully. In September, the French government actually blocked a $7 billion contract to purchase American natural gas, arguing that gas produced without controls on methane leaks was too harmful to the climate, because of course it is. And so, like, that the long-term impact of these changes is just amazing. Hopefully Biden gets out in front of them fast, really fast. I want to read you one more little bit of this. Most of Mr. Trump's environmental policies, which erased or loosened nearly 100 rules and regulations on pollution in the air, water, and atmosphere, which we previously talked about, can be reversed, assuming Biden does the right thing, though not immediately. And pollutants like industrial soot and chemicals can have lasting health effects, especially in minority communities where they're often concentrated. Air quality and water clarity can be restored once emissions are put back under control. But why would that be necessary? I mean, he always talks about how we have the best water, the best air, so clean. But anyway,
So John, you present a bunch of facts and figures and realities about the situation. But again, the opposing argument is, and I'm glad you said it, we have the cleanest air and cleanest water. That's all you have to say. That's your argument? And we're just supposed to listen to you. That's just the way these things work. So again, for people who maybe think, yeah, Donald Trump came into office and he's doing this, and oh, it's not such a big deal. We have another fascist that's about to take over. We have issues with Biden. We do. And those are obvious issues. But let's keep it real. There's things that can't be reversed. And even if they are reversed, it takes a long time for those things to actually take effect. This is not paying attention to what you may think or what you're saying are the important things that we're dealing with. If you're a person who is progressive, it's like, oh, climate change is one of the biggest issues of our time. If you believed in Bernie Sanders, if you voted for him, and then he's talked about how climate change is one of the biggest issues that our world faces. Mm-hmm. And then you don't care that the guy who's literally tearing the world apart and adding to this climate change issue gets reelected because you're mad about what happened in the primaries. It just, these are one of those issues where you can't ignore it and then say they're all the same people. Because it's obvious it was absolutely accelerated since Trump came into office. Explicitly and like they fired all missiles directly at this problem. This is what they wanted. Deregulation so people can make more money, and then who cares about the environment? And then the response that is, ours is the best. If you think that's fine, then you can go ahead and now you should shun Bernie Sanders and shun all of those things that you said were important to you. This is one of those issues. It just is. It won't go away.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the areas that they really focused on and were very successful, because so much of this can be done just through executive orders. And yeah, we've locked in a lot of that damage. So the reason we're talking about this is less to go over the Trump stuff, because we've done that ad nauseum over the past few years, as everyone should, but also try to point out that Biden does have an opportunity, but it's not necessarily a perfect opportunity that can work perfectly immediately, even if he does the perfect things, which we don't know if he will. Even if he succeeds in re-implementing basically all of the regulations, a lot of them that were put in place under Obama and were taken out under Trump, even if he does that instantly, 2 years would pass before those rules would be legally finalized, resulting in more emissions. Legally finalized, actually put into effect, go through court challenges and things like that. Bear in mind, those court challenges could end up at a conservative supermajority Supreme Court, which is always going to be fun. There are some things that you know he can't necessarily do through executive orders, but others can be done almost instantly. I really think that there needs to be a long list of these on day one. The Biden administration can legally reinstate environmental protections on some public lands, including, we've recently talked about the opening up of logging in some of these old growth forests with trees that have been there for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Yeah, some things may be more difficult when it comes to regulation of power plants, regulations of cars. Will the Supreme Court allow those regulations to stand? I don't know. Things just got a lot more tricky. And this is not time that we have to spare. We are already so far behind. and we're trying to secure our future, knowing that there's a conservative Supreme Court that isn't gonna buy that all these regulation changes that Trump has done haven't benefited the economy, and that continuing it isn't going to.
There's plenty of hangover from the Trump administration that's gonna bog down the country for some time. And if you don't think Republicans aren't gonna come in 2 years if things continue to get worse the way they have and say, look, President Biden has been in for 2 years and look how things have gotten worse. So the same way they do with the economy when they inherit a good one and then destroy it. And then claim to say, look what we got, a bad economy. No, you created the bad economy, but you got a great one. And every time a Democrat president comes in and changes what you did or tries to fix what you did, it takes them 8 years to do it. And then you go to destroy it again and blame them. If you don't think they're gonna do that with things like this, you're crazy. They know how this works. They know that there's a hangover and they know that it'll lag into the next person's administration. And then they can then blame them for those issues.
Yeah. Yeah, you're 100% right. But anyway, this has to be an area that he comes out the gate swinging. We'll deal with, you know, the future consequences, but he at least has to do the right thing. Everybody, by the way, should take a little bit of time to go and look. The New York Times did a great write-up about this, about the Sunrise Movement. Their wish list for the Trump, for the Biden cabinet, including on issues of the environment and other things too. We'll see. We'll be watching. Will Biden let us down? Probably, but we'll be here to see. This is a weird one. Everyone, brace yourselves. There is this former GOP county commissioner in Pennsylvania, Dean Browning, who posted a very strange tweet on Tuesday afternoon. I want to jump right to it. So let's take a look at the conversation. So he had tweeted, what Trump built in 4 years, Biden will destroy in 4 months. Okay, so then there's a response from Dunkus5. That's not what's important. What's important is the response to Dunkus5, which says, from Dean Browning, verified, I'm a black gay man and I can personally say that Obama did nothing for me. My life only changed a little bit and it was for the worse. Everything is so much better under Trump though. I feel respected, which I never do when Democrats are involved. So bit of a quick fact check, Dean Browning is neither black nor gay. So that's a problem. We're gonna go through a few more iterations of what all this is, what's going on here. But JR, what does your gut say about Dean Browning's tweet there?
We got a Kevin Durant situation is what we got. Except this one actually means something. You know, Kevin Durant.
The Kevin Durant situation.
Kevin Durant, NBA player, one of the top players in the league, champion, multiple champion, MVP, all this. He doesn't like how people get on it because he switched teams and people got mad because he's a traitor to one team, went to another. The same sports arguments that actually don't mean anything in the real world. They're fun to discuss. So he doesn't like being clowned online because he's a 20-something year old guy who's very well known and very popular. He's like anyone else who's a 20-something year old guy who'd be on the internet and doesn't like people talking trash about him. So he created some burner accounts and started defending himself on like Twitter and everything, maybe Instagram, I don't know.
Yep.
And he did the same thing. Finally, there was one time he forgot to switch back and the Kevin Durant profile said, well, I think Kevin is this and you guys are that. And they're like, you think Kevin is, huh?
Yeah.
At least that one was just funny because he's just defending himself off of his, you know, what people trash, people are talking about him on the internet. But it was hilariously embarrassing. And he said, I'll do it again because who cares, right? But Browning, this guy, This is the playbook. If you see people online talking about some, I'm a black man and I told you guys forever that Democrats suck. Okay, fine. Like, by the way, if you are a gay black man on the internet and said Obama sucks and he's done nothing for your life and Trump is awesome, okay, happy for you. Sit back down. What is that doing for me? Your lies.
Yeah, I know. Well, and look, I have comments. I want to run through his response to this because obviously, yeah, most people assume this was a guy who has a sock puppet, but he forgot to log into the sock puppet and accidentally tweeted from the wrong one. He tweeted out later, regarding the tweet that is going viral from my account, I was quoting a message that I received earlier this week from a follower. Sorry if context was not clear. Oh, maybe sure. Because there was no context. Trump received record minority votes and record LGBTQ votes. Many people won't say vocally, but do in private. Yes, I'm sure he was quoting without quotation marks directly from someone who'd sent him exactly the thing that he wants to say in private, but not in public.
Yeah.
That doesn't make much sense. Here's the thing, look, There are obviously some black and some gay Trump supporters. That is a thing that exists. And I'm sure that if you're part of that community, or if you are a Republican politician and you want that community to be larger, you probably hate the idea societally that those people don't exist. You don't like that that's the narrative out there, even though it's largely statistically true. You know what hurts that case, your case against that narrative, the counter narrative? It is when you find out that people are pretending to be black and gay and conservative, or when bot farms are creating a million of the same exact account that always tweets that they're black and gay and they love these things and it's clearly a bot. That doesn't actually help you in practice.
Yeah, you got plenty of bots. Like the guys that have positions like this don't even need to. There's plenty of fake people saying, by the way, that's like a template statement right there. I'm a gay black Trump supporter. Obama did nothing for me. As a matter of fact, Trump has done more for black people than any other president since Abraham. Like, it's just the same thing.
I know. So sad. And look, there's a little bit more on this that people believe that they might have identified what the sock puppet account is because this person tweets a whole lot, mostly in replies to his tweets, and always says that they're black and gay. I don't know for sure. That could also be the person that sent him this perfect DM, I guess. But the thing is, but that doesn't even make sense, because if this person is DMing him this information for him to quote, and he says some people are only comfortable saying it in private, not in public, but like this guy's saying it in public constantly under this other account, none of this makes sense. None of this is good. And in all likelihood, we may never know for sure. What it looks like is what it looks like, and that is that this is another person operating a sock puppet, because they don't actually believe that they're right. They just need to pretend that other people believe that they're right.
Yeah, it goes into their mindset of how they think they need to convince people is to come up with a fake person that'll somehow convince this fake grassroots, this AstroTurf organization of people that is coming forward and saying that this is that's their life. Who, like, just is this supposed to be effective? Even if you got away with it, is this effective? Is this changing votes? Is this going to change the 100 votes? You're going to get a different change in Georgia? I don't understand. This is so much work. And I said it before, it's so much work to do the wrong thing. Just do the right thing. It's a lot less work, and it'll actually be probably rewarding because people will like you and everyone is happy. You work hard to be bad, to be wrong, to be the liar. It's so much extra work. And then if you get caught, you have to come up with another excuse, and then another excuse, and another excuse that doesn't make any sense. There was a song like in the 80s on this, on like, I watched commercials very closely when I was a kid. It was the public service announcement, one of those things where they were telling people, maybe it was the Church of Latter-day Saints, one of those things that told people how to be a good human. And they had a song where they said, a kid started to lie. And then once he lied, he had to lie about the lie and then lie about the lie. And it was a song that said, you tell one lie, it leads to another. You tell two lies, oh brother. Like, they taught kids this song.
I'm trying to find this now, because that's, if anybody remembers, finding some posts about that.
Yeah, if we're gonna find your random song that you that Cassie for some reason knows.
Yeah. Wait, I think it was Baz Luhrmann. Oh, it might have been a Mormon.
Yeah, it was Jesus, the Church of Latter-day Saints. I remember that in those.
Yeah,
it was
one
of those ads.
There you go.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. I remember those ads. I studied commercials when I was a kid. But anyway, you teach kids that, but grown adults just can't figure it out because.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah. This is this has been a good hour of discussions of 80s music, and we got some more hits coming up for you after this. No, anyway, JR, thank you for joining me as always. The news, this is a weird one. This is a weird day in the news, and we might be facing like 10 more weeks of that at the very least. But appreciate you taking the time out to join us.
Yeah, if anyone notices the or remembers the Tell One Lie song that I ad that I was talking about, I have a GoFundMe account, and if you'd like to support me. I mean, I'm not going to
give me one donation, it leads to another. Give me two donations. Oh, brother. Anyway. Okay, JR.
See you guys.
Thank you. Have a good one. In addition to the many obvious reasons that Donald Trump would probably prefer to remain as president after this January, there are also a few reasons lurking in the background. Things that are waiting for him if he has to go back to being a private citizen. And joining us to break down a few of the most important for the soon to be former president is a senior Washington correspondent for Business Insider, Dave Leventhal. Welcome back to the program.
Hey, great to be with you, John.
Great to have you here. So Trump, president now, soon to be private citizen, assuming all of this tomfoolery and shenanigans going on doesn't work out for him. So in terms of his legal future, he as president has faced certain types of challenges, but he's also been protected in a variety of ways, correct?
Sure has. So being president of the United States comes with a pretty big perk, which is presidential immunity. And Donald Trump, John, has a whole world of hurt waiting for him, a whole world of pain waiting for him when he leaves the White House. And that comes in earnest on January 20th. So we are talking about criminal matters, we're talking about civil matters, talking about federal level matters and also state level matters. And wherever Donald Trump goes, whether that's New York City or Mar-a-Lago or all over the world, he's gonna have back here in the United States waiting for him years and years worth of legal peril at multiple levels involving his political actions, his campaign, his private actions, his business actions, and of course his taxes. And so if you're Donald Trump, you're probably not too happy about the prospects awaiting you.
And so just to be clear, there's no remaining protection against a variety of different sorts of lawsuits. There's no, I mean, other than like hypothetically norms or something like that, but there's no longer any DOJ protection, any memo saying they can't be indicted or anything like that.
Not really. So once Donald Trump leaves the White House, leaves the presidency, he loses any immunity and he becomes a private citizen again. So take the Mueller report, which you know, in the midst of 2020, it's easy to forget about what happened and that Donald Trump was actually impeached and put on trial earlier this year. But basically the Mueller report, if you remember, laid out a whole variety of ways that Donald Trump potentially could have obstructed justice. And if Donald Trump leaves the White House and impeachment is no longer really the one remedy to go after Donald Trump for those types of violations, you could potentially have the DOJ, the Department of Justice, going after Donald Trump again. We have active matters in New York State. The state attorney general and the district attorney in Manhattan are going after Donald Trump for various business related affairs. So yeah, put that all together in a big soup. And it's a number of different things that we've identified that Donald Trump is gonna be dogged by likely for months, if not years to come.
So based on what you've seen coming out of the DOJ, or at least talked about from Joe Biden and his team, how likely do you think those actions are? At least we could set aside the New York stuff, but the stuff that would involve the DOJ, has Biden given any indication that he would be interested in pursuing any of that? Does he need to be involved for the DOJ to continue any of those sorts of investigations?
So the second part of your question first is that no, Joe Biden wouldn't necessarily need to be involved in the Department of Justice under a Biden administration going after Donald Trump. Now, Joe Biden has already said, hey, look, what I'm gonna do with the DOJ is basically let the DOJ be the DOJ. So he's kind of telegraphing at this point that he's not going to have a very hands-on type of control over that department. Perhaps in a way that Donald Trump has been criticized for, where Donald Trump and Attorney General Barr have had a very close relationship, perhaps closer than what we've had in the past. So bottom line is that if the Department of Justice did wanna go after Donald Trump, it would be their prerogative to do so. But those state level matters that we just mentioned, those could actually be the bigger issue for Donald Trump in the sense that the federal government, well, it's just not simply involved. That's a state level matter and something that's separate and apart and stands apart from what's happening at the federal level.
Let me ask you one more question before we turn to New York though, on those federal matters. Whether explicit, you know, I can remember some quotes from Obama about this. It doesn't seem like generally when a new president, a new administration comes in, the DOJ starts pursuing legal matters against former presidents, either because their crimes weren't as obvious or maybe a norm. I personally think that virtually every president has done things that domestically or internationally would run afoul of the law. Do you think that it is likely that they will do that, knowing that you know, we're already a very divided nation. Donald Trump talked often about prosecuting his political enemies, and any action by the DOJ could hypothetically be spun that way from the right.
Joe Biden definitely seems that he wants to turn the page. He wants a sort of return to pre-Trumpian normalcy, if you will. So the notion of setting up some sort of truth and reconciliation commission or going aggressively after Donald Trump at the federal level doesn't necessarily seem to be in the cards at this point. Mm-hmm. But of course, Donald Trump has broken so many norms. Donald Trump has been a president that unlike any that we've had in modern history. So by virtue of that, or as a result of that, we could be talking about a different reaction to a post-Trump presidency by the incoming administration than we've had before. I wouldn't take anything off the table at this point. I also wouldn't take off the table the notion that Donald Trump could possibly consider pardoning himself. He's definitely pardoned other allies of his. And if Donald Trump feels footsteps coming, don't put it past Donald Trump to try to use the powers that he has remaining over the next 9 weeks in order to get out of a situation. Far-fetched? Maybe, but hey, a lot of things have been pretty far-fetched and have come true over the past 4 years.
Yeah, and it of course would be within his power. And like if we're talking about norms, this is less outside of the bounds of norm. Well, pardoning himself, certainly, but presidents often spend the last month or so of their presidency tracking down people to pardon, whether you know it's their former fundraisers or donors or you know people who justifiably deserve it. So he could, in theory, simply say he and his family and Stephen Miller and Jared Kushner or whoever could not be what investigated, could not be sent to jail. How exactly would that work? Would that affect the New York stuff that we're talking about for him and his family for the rest of their lives?
So a pardon just by the nature, a presidential pardon, is not something that affects state level matters. It would only apply to federal level matters. And pardons, if you read your history book and remember what happened with Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon for crimes that he may or may not have committed. But in essence, it was a pardon that absolved him of any future prosecution for the things that he likely would have been impeached for had he not resigned. So a president can definitely pardon somebody for something that they haven't been convicted of. So for example, but we're also getting into some odd legal territory here. We have Roger Stone, the former dirty trickster and definitely ally of Donald Trump, who Donald Trump has commuted his jail sentence. Whether he would pardon somebody like a Roger Stone remains to be seen. And yeah, Donald Trump, in all likelihood, is going to issue a few pardons before he leaves office, almost certainly.
I got to ask you one more question just about the self-pardon. So obviously, he doesn't have to have already been convicted of something to pardon himself. He could preemptively pardon himself or others about it. My question would be, how specific does he have to be? Does he have to say he's pardoned for this particular violation, or can he go broad? Because obviously, if he has to be specific, then it could be read as a list of his admitted crimes. I know that wouldn't have that formal effect, obviously, but can he just say absolves of everything, or does he have to say of this particular corruption or this obstruction of justice?
Well, John, we're getting into some pretty exotic constitutional law questions when you bring that up. I don't think anyone truly knows the answer. And you can fully expect that if Donald Trump tried to pardon himself as president, that something like that would have legal challenges up the wazoo. Now, there's another kind of, you know, if you want to play this out, Donald Trump could resign and have then President Mike Pence pardon him. The chances of that happening pretty darn slim. But again, you gotta play these scenarios out, especially since Donald Trump right now, as we speak, is basically saying, pay no attention to Joe Biden being the president-elect. I'm still the president, and we're just going to move on as if I'm going to be president on January 20th for a second term.
Well, I think that leads us into a good transition to the other topic. In addition to potential legal challenges going forward, Donald Trump has other things waiting for him once he's no longer president. And you have a great write-up about the fact that he is still very much raising money. Even though the campaign's over, the election is done, he's raising money. And not all of it appears like it's going to go to campaigning or whatever. Can you tell us a little bit about the ongoing fundraising of the president and his campaign?
Well, since election night, Donald Trump has been fundraising as if the campaign was still going on. And when it became clear that Joe Biden was in the lead and then Joe Biden became president-elect, the emails, the text messages from Donald Trump's campaign, they've continued. They've continued in some cases hour after hour after hour, morning, noon, and night. So why ever would Donald Trump be raising campaign money when there's no campaign to run yet? Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, at face value, Donald Trump is saying that he is raising money for legal challenges that he's trying to put forth in states such as Michigan and Wisconsin and Nevada and Georgia, and trying to raise money for those efforts. But when you look at the fine print, John, of where this money is actually going, the fine print spells it out. Some of the money, and in the initial portion of any donation that anyone makes to Donald Trump right now, is going for debt retirement. Okay, so to retire any debt that his campaign has. And it's also now going toward a political committee that Donald Trump has set up, something called a leadership PAC that ostensibly could be used after Donald Trump leaves the White House for giving money to other politicians, for setting the stage for a Donald Trump comeback in 2024. Unclear as to how that money would be used. But then the Republican Party itself has a legal fund. They have lots of money to use for all the various legal challenges in the several different states where they're filing challenges. And so, you know, is any of that money that Donald Trump is supposedly raising actually going to be used for legal challenges? Unclear, not sure. Donald Trump isn't going to have to tell anyone for a while yet, too, until we get new reports filed with the Federal Election Commission next month.
Yeah, I would also question how much they'll actually need for the legal challenges, since a lot of them seem to be getting dismissed on day one with the judge effectively just saying the hell out of here. And all of this, by the way, totally legal. If he wants to say, give me money for legal recounts, and he ends up putting quite a bit of it to debt elimination or whatever, he's totally free to do that, correct?
Yeah, he may be bamboozling some of his supporters, or people may be making a $10 or $100 or $1,000 donation, expecting that that money is going to be used to, you know, fight ballot fraud in Pennsylvania. But then the money is actually going to pay off some vendor who Donald Trump hasn't paid in his campaign from months ago. So we don't know where this is all going to go. Again, there will have to be an accounting of this coming up, but we don't get this information in real time. So as a result, yeah, Donald Trump effectively is raising money for purposes that at best are unclear, and at worst are being used for something completely different than he's really presenting this to be. Is it legal? Yeah, it's legal. But that also speaks sort of to the laissez-faire rules that we have for campaign money in a time when we're quite literally talking about a federal level election, president, Congress, and whatnot that cost $14 billion with a B this time around, which is about twice as much as we had just the last presidential election cycle. So, hey, we say it every year, you know, or every 4 years, that this is the most expensive presidential race in the history of the United States. Well, this time, yes, but also by just a country light year. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Really fast, just to tie this into some reporting that you've done in the past, is there any indication that any of this debt reduction will go to police services that have provided security for his rallies in the past that he hasn't paid?
Almost certainly not. The bills are around just short of $2 million in bills that the Trump campaign has received from various municipalities across the country. Mesa, Arizona, Erie, Pennsylvania, a couple cities in Wisconsin, and so forth. And they have not gotten paid. They would love to have that money to pay for municipal services that, of course, are very hard to fund in the midst of a pandemic. So, yeah, but the Trump administration has given absolutely, or I should say, the Trump campaign has given absolutely no indication that it's going to pay any of those bills, including some of which are about 4 years old at this point.
Yeah, and as you said, millions of dollars. So to any conservative watching this, just bear in mind that Trump is, to a limited extent, defunding the police by doing this. But anyway, and then finally, do we have any idea how successful these appeals have been, how much money they've been able to raise since the election?
So we definitely know that they have been raising money. We can tell that people are clicking on these links from some digital things that you can do with the links provided. We definitely know that if they didn't work, then they wouldn't be doing them. But whether we can quantify, we can't quantify, bottom line, whether it's in the hundreds of thousands or millions or tens of millions of dollars. And we won't know to a T until next month how successful they have been. But in the meantime, don't expect that the Trump campaign is going to stop. If you are on his email list or his text message list, you're going to keep getting these suckers.
Well, let me ask one quick follow up to that, because since the election, I know Stacey Abrams raised several million dollars in just a few days, and they publicized that, as you know, successful fundraising efforts often do. They say how much money they've been able to raise. Is this out of the norm at all that they're not trumpeting how much money they've raised for specifically for the recount battles or the legal challenges or anything like that?
It's all voluntary and it all depends on the campaign. Now, campaigns at any point in time can release information about their fundraising. What they're legally obligated to do is another matter. So the Trump campaign and any political campaign isn't going to have to release financial information for sort of the post-election period until early December. So I don't expect the Trump campaign is going to put dollar figures out there, although they could if they wanted to. And so that's just a kind of a quirk of election law and how it all works. And I should note too that Democrats definitely have too been using this post-election overtime period as a absolute opportune time to go and raise money and try to fill their own coffers, because you know, in essence, Trump has been pushing back so hard.
Exactly. And anyone watching this that wants more information, whether about the legal challenges to come or about the fundraising, Day's work is available. You can go and read a number of great articles written about these topics on Business Insider, and I would definitely advise that you do. Dave Leventhal, as always, love your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.